from NPR and WBUR Boston, I'm Meghna Chakrabarty, and this is On Point. In love, yet living apart. Thanks to technology, it might be the best time ever to be in a long-distance relationship. So says our guest this hour. He argues that the same technological and economic forces that could be driving couples apart, whether it's for career advancement or educational opportunities or military deployments, they're all actually making the geographic separation less stressful, maybe, and more enjoyable. Couples using unlimited data and high-speed internet to be together, interacting in real time or simultaneously streaming movies and shows and experiencing the mundane moments, too, that form the bedrock of successful relationships all through technology. So this hour on Point, tech and making long-distance relationships last. And you can join us. Are you in a long-distance relationship right now or have been recently? And is technology making it easier? Is there something still missing, even though you see each other across a screen every day? Or do you prefer it this way? And what happens when you're back in the same place? Is reality better or worse than the tech-mediated moments you had while apart? Yes, you can reach out to us through technology at onpointradio.org or Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Well, joining us today from Washington is Joe Pinsker. He's a staff writer at The Atlantic who covers families and education, and it was his piece we're referring to. It's headlined, The New Long-Distance Relationship, and there's a link to it at onpointradio.org. Joe Pinsker, welcome to you.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for having me.
It's great to have you. So let me just ask you first and foremost. I'm going to guess that this is an issue that touches many people's lives, but what inspired you to write about it?
Well, you are correct in guessing that this touched my life as well and still does. As of late August last year, I've been in a long-distance relationship myself. And of course, there's, you know, a danger to thinking that as a journalist, your life is representative of other people's. But once I dug into this, I saw that this is a much wider spread phenomenon than just me.
Well, I will say that at least, you know, some ideas do begin with personal experience and then get justified through research. So that's fine. That's good. And so first of all, tell us, what did you find? I mean, is there a way to really pin down whether or not the number of long-distance relationships, marriages or long-term committed relationships is growing? Do we know?
So we don't. It's hard to pin down decisively. But there are a bunch of things pointing in the direction of there are more than there used to be. There are a couple of numbers that we can look to. One is that in roughly the past 20 years, the number of married Americans who are 18 and up who said that they live apart from their spouse rose from 2.7 million to 3.9 million, which is a huge jump. And the unfortunate thing is that this data doesn't tell us why people are living apart,
right,
but some of them may have been living together for jobs. And then there are a number of other data points we can look to, but really we can rely on kind of the larger societal forces here. There are a bunch of things that would make it more likely that people would be living apart, one of them being that couples who are prioritizing the female partner's job are now doing so in a way that they previously didn't a generation or two ago. And that tends to pull couples apart and live in two different places.
Yeah, so it pulls couples apart, whereas traditionally, when the male job was prioritized, didn't pull couples apart, the woman went to wherever the man's job was. So why aren't we seeing that, the mirror image of that?
Yeah, I mean,
I was going to go there. I went there. Why aren't we seeing that?
Yeah, I mean, basically because there's some interesting research on this, actually, because one of the economists who was looking at high-educated, well-educated couples found that it was much more likely that if the – in heterosexual couples specifically found that if the man in the relationship was the one with the graduate degree, it was more likely that they'd live together. But if it was the woman with the graduate degree, it was more likely that they'd live apart. So there does seem to be a sort of preferential treatment still for the man's job.
Okay. Well, I want to play a little bit of sound here because this issue of long-distance relationships, I mean, popular culture has tangled with it quite frequently. So this is from a 2006 episode of the sitcom How I Met Your Mother. And we're going to hear Ted, played by Josh Radnor, and his then-girlfriend Victoria, played by Ashley Williams. They face a crossroads when she's offered a scholarship to a culinary institute in Germany.
I don't think that long distance really works for anyone.
Oh, God, no. Long distance is a lie teenagers tell each other to get laid the summer before college. Look, I know it never works for anyone, but do you want to try long distance?
Yes. Yes.
We can beat the odds.
Odd schmods.
It's going to work. We're going to make it work. It'll work.
It didn't work.
Yep.
Long distance was and is a terrible idea. A really terrible idea. Just awful.
That's from a 2006 episode of How I Met Your Mother. Mm-hmm. Joe Pinsker, though, you talked to quite a few couples who were and are making it work, and technology was a really big part of that. So what are they doing that's allowing them to maintain a form of emotional intimacy even across thousands of miles?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think a lot of the things that have given long distance a bad rap are becoming a bit obsolete and outdated just because of how connected people can be technology-wise. I talked to one guy who and his girlfriend would watch TV together every night using this website that sort of lets the two of them share a screen. And he said that it was, quote, it's almost like being in the same room together, which for people who aren't in long-distance relationships can probably sound a bit hollow and a bit hyperbolic. But I was really struck by how all these people genuinely built intimacy together using technology.
Well, so Joe, I'm going to come across as sounding like a complete Luddite, and I don't really mean to, but this particular part of your story that you just pointed to, I didn't even know that like this kind of technology existed. So it's a website where people thousands of miles apart can watch the same sort of streaming video content, and then do they see each other? I mean, how are they interacting?
Right. So you can actually set it up to broadcast a little video feed. It's sort of like a little circle beneath the screen that shows your face and then your partner's face or your friend. I mean, it doesn't have to be a romantic co-streaming. But and then there's also a little audio feed. So you can sort of watch how your partner is reacting and hear them, I don't know, mutter some comment under their breath.
It's, I mean, I was blown away by it. I was like, I want to try this, even though my partner, my husband is usually sitting right next to me here. But so, Joe, hang on for just a second here, because I want to bring into the conversation now Laura Stafford. She's with us from Bowling Green, Ohio, and she's a professor and director of the School of Media and Communication at Bowling Green State University. She studies long-distance relationships, interpersonal communication, and relational maintenance. Professor Stafford, welcome to On Point.
Hi, thanks for having me.
So tell us about, I mean, how deep is the intimacy that people can form when using these kinds of technologies to stay in daily or perhaps even constant contact over long distances? I mean, is it a lasting form of intimacy?
That's a really good question. Of course, everybody defines intimacy a little bit differently. What we have found is that couples in long-distance relationships say that they're more in love, more committed to, more satisfied with their relationships than couples in proximal relationships.
Wow. So they are more in love while apart.
That's what they say. Yes. And it kind of makes sense because in some ways, to make the distance work, you need to believe that about your relationship.
Okay, so what are they exactly in love with, though? Are they in love with the reality of their relationship, the reality of their partner, or a kind of ideal that they can form when the interactions are can be so selective?
Well, one of the things that I've looked at a lot is the idea of the idealization or of the partner. Now, a little bit of idealization is always healthy. You know, it's always good to see our partner in positive, you know, with positive biases. But long-distance couples do tend to have a less real vision of their partner than a proximal couple. That said, it really, there's so much that depends upon how frequently are they seeing each other face-to-face, how long were they together before they separated. It's very different to meet somebody online than it is to have been married or living together for several years and then separate.
Well, so I'm going to come back to that in a second, Professor Stafford, but we just got this comment from Jordan on our website just a minute ago. And Jordan says, I'm in a long-distance relationship and my partner and I communicate really well, but what's been hard is that it's easy to hide things like bad days, sadness, vulnerability. We're not laying next to each other, so she can't see on my face what's wrong. It's forced me to learn to say I'm not okay today rather than hope I can hide it, because the distance actually makes it easy to be distant. Professor Stafford, what do you think about that?
I think that makes perfect sense. One of the things that Joe and I talked about was how in long-distance relationships, couples do tend to put off things, like they don't want to engage in conflict because they don't want to have that conflict or that disappointment over the phone or via text. It just doesn't seem really appropriate. They don't want to bring the other person down when they can't do anything about it anyway. We heard that comment a lot. Well, they can't do anything about it anyway, so why bother them? And then they tend to keep the same type of things kind of hidden when they're together because they don't want to ruin their time together.
Oh, interesting. Okay, so Joe Pinsker, we've just got 30 seconds before we have to take a quick break. So, I mean, is that the foundation of a strong relationship or not?
Right. It's a good question. It works really well in the short term, right?
Yeah.
It makes it easier to be together. It makes it easier to think really highly of your partner. But as Laura's research indicates, when couples move back in together after being apart, they're actually more likely to break up. And so that, makes you wonder just how strong the relationship was.
Okay. So we're going to come back to that after our quick break here. Joe Pinsker and Laura Stafford, stand by. We are talking about long-distance relationships and how technology may be making it easier to keep those relationships going. But as we're going to discuss when we come back, what happens when the couples come back together? We'll be back. This is On Point.
Support for the On Point podcast comes from Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform that lets you find candidates fast. Ditch the busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And listeners get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/on point. That's Indeed.com/on point. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking this hour about technology and long-distance relationships and how your smartphone or your computer might be making it easier to have long-distance relationships that stand the test of time and distance. This is something that pop culture has definitely engaged with over the past many years. So how about in 2010, when the film Going the Distance told the story about a couple who start a long-distance relationship after a brief fling? So maybe they didn't actually have enough time together to begin with. But in this scene, Erin, played by Drew Barrymore, is upset that her summer internship didn't turn into a full-time job, and she calls boyfriend Garrett, played by Justin Long.
I wanted that job, okay? I wanted to be in New York.
I know, but look at it this way. It's not like someone else got the job over you, you know? They're just not taking anyone on.
Yeah, I get it. It's not just about the job. I wanted to be in the same city as you.
I know. Believe me, I know. You're angry and you're frustrated, and I get it, and I wish I could hug you.
I know. That's the whole problem, is you're there, and I'm here, and it stinks.
Relax now and try to get some sleep, and we'll make a new plan tomorrow, I promise.
I gotta go, okay? Bye.
That's from the 2010 film Going the Distance. I'm joined today by Joe Pinsker, staff writer at The Atlantic. He's written extensively about long-distance relationships and technology. And Laura Stafford joins us as well. She's professor and director at the School of Media and Communication at Bowling Green State University. Let's actually go to the callers here because, wow, my goodness, there's a lot of long-distance relationships out there. Tyler is calling from Harrisonburg, Virginia. Tyler, you're on the air.
Hi, Meghna. Thanks for taking my call. So I am in a 6,000-mile long-distance relationship and have been for a little over a year now. My partner is a dentist. She lives in Chile. And, well, we first met when I lived down there in 2012-13. And as far as far as technology is concerned, I'm a pretty rustic technology user. You know, I'd say WhatsApp is the backbone of you know, our communication. But but as far as, you know, what we've found that makes it work is essentially a pressureless situation. So, you know, not longing for, you know, like, oh, I so wish you were here. You know, that's understood. And instead of having to, like, build up this grand thing, I myself am an art student. I'm a ceramicist, and she's a dentist, mm-hmm. and she's established, and, you know, just about to finish her home. So
it sounds like it's really working for you, Tyler. Thank you so much for your call. Laura Stafford, I was fascinated to hear Tyler say it's essentially a pressureless situation. Is that because you can, unlike in a proximal relationship, as you called it earlier, where you are living with that person or see them physically every day, that at a distance, you can very much choose the times and the means by which you communicate or interact. And that does reduce some of the pressures of the relationship.
Well, very much so. There is a complete absence of the day-to-day frictions that we tend to encounter even in the best of relationships. There's no, you left the window down in the car, or you didn't make the bed, or the dishes are still in the sink, or just the occasional being grumpy or not being in a good mood. Those pretty much are taken off the table to have to deal with.
Yeah, but isn't the absence of those frictions, as you were saying, exactly one of the reasons why, from your research, you find that when couples come together, when that distance is brought down to 0 miles, that they're less likely to stay together because they don't have the relationship toolkit to manage the reality of what it means to be living with someone.
Okay, but just let me clarify something. Most still stay together.
Okay.
Most weather the storm.
Okay, but they're more likely to break up.
Likely to break up after they come together than while they're apart, though. You're more likely to stay together while you're separated than when you get back together. And one of the number one complaints from people was a lack of autonomy, a lack of independence. They weren't used to having to coordinate with anybody. So that was one thing. And another thing is that people did say that they learned a lot of new negative information.
They learned new negative information because their partner was in control of what was being communicated about them at a distance. But you can't really hide your imperfections when you're face to face all the time.
Right, and just little annoyances or habits, or, you know, not doing the dishes, and they weren't my dishes before. Now they're my dishes. You're not doing so. I forgot how sloppy he was. I forgot how he tended to run late. I forgot how much time she took in the bathroom, to be stereotypical. Just a lot of little annoyances.
Right.
But probably a bigger thing was a loss of autonomy.
Mm-hmm.
People who thrive in long-distance relationships tend to be very independent, autonomous people.
Yeah. Well, Laura Stafford, professor and director of the School of Media and Communication at Bowling Green State University, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me. It was my pleasure.
Really fascinating to have you. Joe Pinsker, let me turn back to you here. This issue of autonomy that Professor Stafford brings up to us, it makes a lot of sense, right? If you find richness and intimacy in a relationship that's largely based on one or two forms of communication, and you like your independence, ostensibly, it could go on forever.
Yeah.
I'm not saying that in a joking way. I really mean it. I think that combination a lot of people do value. And technology, as you write about, is making it easier. It is making it possible for that intimacy of that particular kind to be a major part of a relationship, even at, you know, 6,000 miles, as our caller was saying.
Right. And I wonder, even as I was reporting all this out, I started to wonder to what extent when two people are apart, technology can kind of help them almost compartmentalize their relationship into just one, you know, one slice of their day as they would with, I don't know, like Netflix or reading the paper or something. And what I'm saying there is that for a couple of people I talked to, there was just this one quote that really like jumped out to me. It was this graduate student who's lived in Boston and her boyfriend was in North Carolina. And she was talking about how in a way it's a relief to be apart because they're both so busy. And so because they were apart, it meant they almost had a built-in excuse for why they weren't spending more time together. And if they'd been in the same place but just as busy, they might feel like they should be spending more time together. This was just a phase of their life, but it just really struck me.
Interesting. Well, we've got a lot of comments coming in. Chris Cortez says, living over 9,000 miles apart, we've only been able to spend 28 of the 3 years of our relationship together in person. Don't see how people did this before Skype or Google Hangouts were a thing. And Dahlia Rubera says, my husband and I met online 15 years ago. He had just joined the military and I was back in my country. We got married a year later, and between many deployments, many months apart, and our twins, now 12 years old, our relationship has grown stronger each day. Well, let's go to Andy, who's calling from Miami, Florida. Andy, you're on the air.
Hi, Magna. Yeah, so I just I really resonate with a lot of things that were being said. I was in a long-distance relationship for a little over 3 years with someone who was about 9,000 miles away. And, you know, it was right at the advent of Skype really becoming, you know, in the mainstream. And what we found was, you know, really it stunted our development as a couple. So it actually, you know, prolonged something that would have been short if we would have actually been together, because we didn't have those intimate moments, as a lot of your commenters have noted, which didn't allow us to kind of really know each other to kind of uncover who we really are and whether or not this would actually work. It always kind of kept us a bridge apart, so we didn't have those intimate moments that would have otherwise kind of helped our relationship develop. But our relationship didn't work, and which was actually worked out great because I ended up meeting my wife later. But, even with the technological innovations, it just wasn't going to work.
Wow. Well, Andy, thank you so much for your call, and I'm glad things ultimately worked out for the best for you. Well, I want to introduce into the conversation now LaDawn Black. She joins us from Baltimore, Maryland. She is an author and relationship expert and online relationship coach for Match.com, Yahoo, and several other websites as well. LaDawn Black, welcome to you.
Thank you so much for having me.
It's great to have you. Now, pick up where our caller left off here. He was talking about the fact that being apart, even with technology, it actually stunted the relationship that he was in. So for people who do find themselves apart, how would you advise that they avoid being having a stunted relationship?
Well, the thing is, you have to be real. And I think that some of the comments earlier in the show sort of noted that, you know, if I only know that I have 5 minutes to talk to you, if I only know that, you know, we're going to get together in this very, very brief period, I'm going to present my best self during that time. So you still have to be real. You have to say, look, I had a rough day today. You know, I'm having some family issues. My job situation isn't working out. We have to really invite our long distance lovers and partners into our real world.
How do you do that, though? Because if you're, you know, say you got, granted, some people I know are setting up their Skypes and just leaving it open in their kitchen as they're making dinner. They don't even have to necessarily be in a conversation. But if the time feels very precious, right, you only got a couple of minutes through FaceTime or whatever or what have you, how do you say, okay, well, now we're going to make time for that hard conversation? Don't you want to just fill that time with, like, just the good stuff of the day?
You absolutely do. But what I find is the couples that actually succeed at this thing are very good at saying, you know, look, can I give 5 minutes of just saying what happened to me today and then we can go back to the good stuff? I mean, they'll literally work that into their time together, because the truth is, I can look at you through Skype. I can see in your face that something is off. If we are talking or texting, that's something that we can communicate. We have to put our genuine selves out there, even when we have limited time, because what you'll run into is the scenario that the gentleman just mentioned, is that we really don't know each other. We really don't understand each other because we're really not sharing.
Oh, interesting. So, Joe Pinsker, when you were reporting your story, you talked to people who said that they have to be, they're trying to find ways to be intentional to create this exact space that LaDawn Black is talking about.
Absolutely. And I think this is where one of the biggest shifts that came up in my story really plays out. I mean, go back 10 years, I mean, let alone 50 or 100, and the state of communication technology is so much different than it was 10 years ago. I mean, iPhones were sort of just coming out. Data plans existed but weren't quite as roomy as they are now. High-speed internet is just – it's everywhere. And so being able to share everything with someone, it just – these days it feels like it's a lot easier to build in the time. And that was something that I found. The people I talked to, they were saying that they didn't avoid hard conversations because they had things like video chat. It obviously wasn't as good as being in the same room, but it sort of approximated it in a way that maybe writing a letter or a long-distance phone call didn't. Huh.
Well, Don Black, we have a comment that's come into us over Twitter. Richard says, sorry, folks, but the 2+ years of a long-distance relationship I'm in is not made better by technology. And here's the part. Going to bed in the evening and waking up in the morning with my iPad is not comforting to either of us. I mean, we've been talking a lot about communication and emotional intimacy, but there is, I mean, obviously, there's going to be no physical intimacy.
True.
When you're thousands of miles apart.
True.
So, like, what, I mean, is there anything to be done about that? Yeah, go ahead.
Absolutely. I think it's important in any long-distance relationship. If we were talking about long-distance relationships 20 years ago before all of this technology and even talking about it today, I think setting dates where you're actually going to be face-to-face is very important. What I find works for a lot of couples is we're going to see each other in 3 months. We're going to see each other in 6 months. You know, what are we going to do? Where are we going to stay? What's new in that town that we're going to try out? You have to have those sort of graduation points where you know that you're going to actually physically see each other because it's something to look forward to. You have to have those in place.
Okay. Well, we've got a lot of callers, so let me turn back to them. Stephanie is calling from Montreal, Quebec. Stephanie, you're on the air.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I wanted to say, because now I'm married, so when I met my husband, I'm originally from Haiti, and I went to see him in Florida, where he's from, and I happened to be there when the earthquake happened in 2010, so I was pretty much stuck in Florida. And I think when we realized we really wanted to do this and be together, but eventually I would have to go back home, we kind of, I guess we didn't say it, but we did feel like the relationship was a little too new to be tested with the long distance. And we've never been apart from each other for more than 2 weeks. However, now I'm going to go fast forward this. 10 years later, after being together, 8 years married, and 2 kids later, he's now stationed in Georgia for work. And we feel more confident, we felt more confident that our relationship could go through the long distance, that it's okay now because we've established a life together. We know each other, petties. We're okay with what annoys each other.
Yeah.
And it makes it easier in a way because it's not just about intimacy anymore. It's not just about, you know, let's do the cute stuff over WhatsApp video or FaceTime. We talk about everything and daily stuff because there are priorities. Yeah. And we still make time for each other. So we'll have video chat when it's me and the kids and him. But then there's also times when it's just me and him. So we still have the us time, even through technology, which is not the equivalent of date night, I'll tell you that. But yeah. it still makes up for something, you know,
right.
I and like you said earlier, I will be in my kitchen and my laptop or my phone will be on and we're both doing our thing,
right.
But we're kind of doing them together in a way. But I will say one thing, as a married woman, the hardest part, I believe, is when he comes home to visit and he'll leave and there's his last cup of coffee that still hangs there.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Something he was doing. So it's like he left his mark or his trace, I guess, in the space
mm-hmm.
where we live.
Mm-hmm.
And it's easier when me and the kids travel to go see him.
Well, Stephanie, thank you so much for your call. And I can see that cup of coffee in my mind's eye. Thank you for your call. We are talking about technology and how it's helping long-distance relationships last and perhaps even enriching them. But as Stephanie, our caller, just talked about, also, you know, how do people face the challenges about when they come back together? Joe Pinsker is with us this hour. He has written about this in The Atlantic, and LaDawn Black, an author and relationship expert, is also with us. We'll be right back. This is On Point. This is On Point. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. We're talking about technology and long-distance relationships this hour. Joe Pinsker is with us. He's written about this for The Atlantic, where he covers families and education. LaDawn Black is also with us. She's an author and a relationship expert and an online relationship coach for Match.com, Yahoo, and several other websites. And wow, the comments are really tumbling in fast and furious. Jaso Turner says, I'm two minds of this. Part of me thinks I'd rather just be single, but another part of me has to concede. If you find a soulmate and this is your option for a while, well, you do what you need to do to maintain the relationship. So Jaso Turner says it's deflated his visceral inclination to snark. Good, Jaso. I'm glad to hear that. Laura Marcus says, my 2+ years away from my husband, then boyfriend, when he was deployed was hard. But we didn't rely on technology exclusively. Letters and surprise gifts are romantic. Also, a lack of physical intimacy forced us to become closer emotionally. So on this note of deployments leading to long-term, long-distance relationships, let's go to Adrian, who's calling from Virginia Beach, Virginia. Adrian, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Great to have you. So you're connected to or a member of the military?
Well, I am actually active duty myself, and I'm a embedded mental health provider with a unit that deploys regularly. And so I just wanted to comment that with the sailors that I serve and myself, technology is certainly something that we rely on to stay connected with our spouses, our children, our significant others, and our family back home. And it is something that has certainly come a significantly long way over the past decades that has been immensely helpful to us. But at the same time, because it's so easily accessible now, it's no longer just, as some of your previous callers and commenters have said, you get the good news, but you also get the bad. Mm. And so instead of it being kind of like it was back, you know, in previous conflicts, and say, we'll just use stereotypical Vietnam, where you'd get a letter once a month or such as that, that would give you an update on how things are going so well and keep you motivated and looking forward to coming home. You're hearing about the broken dishwasher, and you may even be asked to, you know, get a hold of the provider yourself, the mechanic, to come out and fix it, because maybe your spouse doesn't know who to call or doesn't feel comfortable, doesn't have the time. And you're half a world away, but you're being asked to fill this role that really you're not present for. And it adds this, it can add this additional layer of stress to an already deployed service member. And that's kind of what I'm there for. But at the same time, I just feel like it's kind of technology has become this really two-sided coin where uh-huh. it's really great and it allows us to stay connected back home, but it allows us to stay connected to the day-to-day struggles back home as well that we, although we may feel that we need to be involved with, we need to help with, we really can't.
Because there's not much you can do when you're thousands of miles away on a deployment. Adrian, thank you so much for your call. Joe Pinsker, what are you hearing what Adrian's saying?
Yeah, I think my what's occurring to me now is just that, yes, it's true that technology is bringing in both the good and the bad. But what I would argue is that relationships have a mix of good and bad. And working through some of the harder, more difficult stuff is actually how you build intimacy. And so, yes, probably you don't want to be hearing about the broken dishwasher, you know, when you're deployed and thousands of miles away. But it's going to connect the two of you in a way that just having more selective, edited, curated information about someone is going to.
Right. Well, LaDawn Black, I'm trying to resist my urge to just be completely geriatric about this and say, nothing's going to be as good as being in the same room as the person that you love. Because, of course, you know, look, we've got a couple of generations of folks now who've grown up with this technology. So
exactly.
So forming that those sort of intimacies, you know, through a screen is completely normal to them. Is it just that we should sort of open our minds or just even change what we consider to be completely normal or expected forms of communication for relationships as they grow and evolve?
You know what? You have to throw in the generational component when you talk about this. We have people who have been raised, you know, I've been Skyping my friends for years. You know, we didn't run to each other's houses. You know, no, we just sat in our bedrooms and talked. Or we play computer games with complete strangers. You know, we've been raised with social media where people are our friends and we've never, ever met them. You know, so it's a generational thing where they're very comfortable with that. So I don't necessarily have to hold your hand every day or see your face every day for us to have this really, really strong bond. So I do agree there is a generational component. Now, if you're outside of that generation, if that wasn't your experience forming early relationships, you have to be open to it. Because what's happening is that we are finding in our local towns that maybe the dating pool isn't that large.
Yeah.
So you have to expand your reach. So that's when you get into your dating apps and your online dating, which has you in, you know, over here on the East Coast, possibly finding your ideal match on the West Coast. You have to be open to that. And then you have modern marriages where none of us or a lot of us were not raised in traditional homes where both parents were in the home. So people are a little bit more open to the fact that dad lives in a different city than mom or that maybe I travel between homes. So it's not a big deal or a huge requirement that we live together.
So how do I put this? I mean, this seems to be a potential huge boon for, say, highly educated women of color. Right. Because, I mean, I've read so many stories and had so many conversations with folks who say the dating pool for what I'm looking for in a relationship just isn't that big where I am.
Absolutely. It is an option. If you're living in a city and you feel like, look, there's not a whole bunch of men of color that are available to me, then now I have the opportunity to actually date outside of my town, even outside of the country, if I want to do something that's really, really crazy. But it does. It opens up the world of dating. It opens up the world of opportunity when it comes to marriage because, as you referenced earlier in the show, if I'm someone who has a very vigorous, a very busy career, I don't necessarily have to have the expectation that me and my spouse are in the same town. This really expands love options. And when you look at the stats as far as who's available to date, to marry, this type of situation with a long-distance relationship and being able to connect through technology can really be the answer for people who feel like they're losing at love.
Yeah, so it's a definite great tool in terms of expanding the dating pool, starting relationships, building relationships. But LaDawn, earlier in the hour, we talked a lot with Laura Stafford about what happens if and when those two people want to come together. Right? Mm-hmm. She talked about the frictions of just the reality of a relationship in the same space or under the same roof. And I don't want to make light of those frictions. I mean, profound sources of tension in many households revolve around the little things that you didn't have to deal with when you were just across the screen. So how do you advise people to, you know, get ready for that and to deal with those things in a healthy, loving and positive way?
You have to be aware that there's going to be an awkward period. But what I would caution people on is that that's not just the work of technology and having a long distance relationship. A lot of your callers are dealing with deployments. Mm. So they may have been married prior to the deployment. The spouse comes home and then it's all of a sudden, why did you put that fork there? They know each other. There's an established relationship, but there's a few hours or even a few days of sort of going, okay, he's back, she's back, let's get back on track. So you're going to have that even in a dating situation or an early marriage where you guys are in the same space. You're not necessarily in that space on a regular basis. You sort of have to be patient and be understanding and realize that there's going to be that adjustment phase. It's the same adjustment phase if grandma moved in grandpa moved in, we bought a pet. You know, it's introducing something new into your situation. Just be patient and realize this is normal.
Oh, patience. It's a key to any relationship here. Let's go back to the phones. Anne is calling from Cambridge, Massachusetts. Anne, you're on the air.
Thank you for taking my call. That was like the perfect segue because I married somebody that I had dated long distance. And, you know, I think the whole issue of technology certainly made that more facile because, you know, we could Skype each other and we could, you know, we both had phone options that, you know, people a couple generations ago didn't have prior. But what was really tough is that when we did come together and we wound up having a family, it imploded because, you know, we had this sparkly, magical dating situation. We would meet, he was not a U.S. citizen. We would meet outside the country. We'd meet in foreign cities. It was a blast. It was like the most romantic relationship beginning I'd ever had. But then when it came to real life, you know, when it came to somebody taking out the garbage, when it came to aging parents, when it came to dealing with children, we still commuted for 3 years with a baby and then, you know, toddler.
Yeah.
And it was impossible because, you know, what came out of that was we really didn't have similar values, but we didn't know that until we had like real world situations.
Okay. Well, Anne, thank you so much for your call. And it almost sounds like, you're saying buyer beware, but Anne, thank you. Let's go to Heather, who's calling from Montrose, Pennsylvania. Heather, you're on the air.
Hi, yes, thank you for having me. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Good. I love the show.
So tell us your story.
Yes. So I'm actually engaged to the man that I've been dating long distance for about 6 years now. He lives in Canada. I live in Pennsylvania, and we've never actually lived together. But we certainly make an effort to see each other as much as possible. There's been a lot of driving back and forth. We see each other about every month and a half or so. But it actually came at a really great point because I'm in school. I'm in grad school. I'm studying for my doctorate. And it's really made me have to put forth a lot of effort into our relationship since, you know, he's not right there. So I can't just brush it off and say, well, I see you already, so I don't have to put in any effort.
Well, Heather, thank you so much for your call. Joe Pinsker, let me turn back to you here because I'm hearing a lot of people mostly saying that the period of their long-distance relationship was really positive, right? And that technology was one of the main factors that made it positive. Definitely differences of opinion in terms of what happens after the distance is closed. But in your reporting, it seemed like most people said that that they would prefer to be long distance now because of technology than, say, a generation or two ago.
Yes, this is kind of one of my favorite things about reporting this article, hearing people conceptualize the way that this stuff must have worked 50, 20 years ago. What's really interesting, I talked to this media scholar who studies the speed of communication technologies over the course of history. So he's looked at letters and he's looked at phones and the telegraph. And the point that he made that I love is just that at any given point in time, people consider the communication technologies around them to be superior to what came before them. So, yes, to a person, everybody I talked to said that they'd much rather be in a long-distance relationship now. They can't imagine how it would have been done in the past. And yet, this media scholar suggested that if I'd gone back and asked anybody, you know, 20 years ago, 50 years ago, even longer ago, they would have said the exact same thing about the poor people who came before them.
And people 50 years from now will say the same thing too, right? I mean, you write
yes.
about how maybe we'll have holograms or VR or haptic suits to simulate touch. And people then will be
right.
like, I can't believe they didn't have haptic suits 50 years ago. How did they survive?
I really do think people of the future are going to think we're currently living in the Stone Age.
As they always do. Let's get one more call in here. Jesse is calling from Rapid City, South Dakota. Jesse, you're on the air.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead.
So I was a Peace Corps volunteer in 2005 to 2007, and I was in South Africa. And at my time, my friend was in Juneau, Alaska, serving as a Jesuit volunteer. So we were 12 hours apart. You know, we couldn't get much, you know, further around without coming back around. And one of the things that we did is we learned the foundations of communication. Of course, then we had letters, and that's all we did was letters. But then when we came back together, we remembered those foundations of communication.
Uh-huh.
So it was awkward right at first, but then realizing, hey, this person over the letters is actually the same person that's in front of me now. So now where it's we've been 9 years married and we still apply those foundations of communication because we had to when we were so far apart.
Jesse, thank you so much for your call. So LaDawn Black, in the last 2 minutes that we have, I think Jesse has put it just right, that maybe another way to see all of this, the whole technology and long distance question, is all of us, whether we're together or spend long amounts of time apart, A, ought to get better at communication, and B, maybe put our relationship in different environments or different circumstances, just so that you know we learn about who the other person is, given the different kinds of situations we might find ourselves in.
Absolutely. You have to be flexible when it comes to a relationship. So if you're in an established relationship and there's an opportunity out of town, you have to be prepared to adjust. If you're dating and you're not finding what you want in your local town, you have to be prepared to adjust and expand your reach. I think the overarching reason or thing that we should point out here is that you have to be built for this. So just like online dating isn't for everyone, or dating via apps isn't for everyone, or meeting someone at the bar isn't for everyone, this type of technology-based dating or marital situation may not be for you.
Yeah.
I think earlier in the show you said you have to be very independent, that the studies have played out that people are very autonomous that make this work. You have to be honest about whether or not this is actually for you.
Right. And the loss of autonomy, though, is one of the things that made the long-distance relationships less likely to last when the people were actually together. So that's the downside to all of this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And you have to know yourself and be willing to step out there or say, look, honestly, this is not going to work for me because I need to wake up next to that person every day.
Well, LaDawn Black, author and relationship expert and online relationship coach for Match.com, Yahoo, and other websites, with us today from Baltimore. It's been a great pleasure to have you, LaDawn. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Joe Pinsker, staff writer at The Atlantic, where he covers families and education. It was Joe's piece headlined "The New Long-Distance Relationship" that caught our attention. We have a link to it at onpointradio.org. Joe, thank you.
Thanks for having me. That was fun.
On Point is produced by Anna Bauman, Brian Hardzinski, Eileen Amada, Stefano Katsonis, Allison Poli, James Ross, Alex Schroeder, and Grace Tatter, with help from Sydney Wertheim. Our executive producer is Karen Schiffman. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is On Point.